February 10th, 1981. Cedar Ridge, Colorado. After showing up at Cedar Ridge High School, 17-year-old Roger Ellison places his books inside his locker, but he never attends any of his classes that day and vanishes without a trace. One of Roger's teachers comes under suspicion when he allegedly makes some bizarre statements to Roger's mother, but no evidence links him to Roger's disappearance. Over the years, there are a number of odd developments, including a deathbed confession from a witness who claimed he saw Roger being held at gunpoint in the woods, but Roger's body is never found, and there are no answers about what happened to him. After that, the trail went cold. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host, Robin Warder, and this week, we're going to be exploring an unsolved case involving a missing high school student, the 1981 disappearance of Roger Ellison. I first became familiar with this story when I featured it in an article I published for listfirst.com 9 years ago, titled, 10 Cases of Students Vanishing from Their Schools, and I've since received a couple of requests to cover it, as I don't believe the case has been featured on many podcasts. It involves a 17-year-old student named Roger Ellison who showed up for school one morning and was last seen placing books inside his locker before he told one of his friends he would see him in class. But after that, Roger just seemed to vanish into thin air, and he has not been seen for over 40 years. One of the key figures in this case is a man named John Pasch, who was Roger's social studies teacher at the time and supposedly made some strange comments to Roger's mother, which put him on the police's radar, and a search would later be performed of Pasch's former residence. Years later, an eyewitness would make a deathbed confession in which he claimed that he had seen Roger right before he was murdered, but no evidence was found to support this story. One aspect of this case that I'll be discussing on this episode is a lengthy series of threads at the Web Sleuth Forum, which date back 14 years, and are a combined total of nearly 60 pages long. At one point, John Pasch himself popped up in these threads to make a number of odd rambling posts in which he denied any involvement in Roger's disappearance and maintained that he was a victim of misinformation which had been spread about the case. Regardless of Pasch's guilt or innocence, this is a pretty puzzling mystery, as over the years, there have been a number of rumors and theories about what might have happened to Roger, but no concrete evidence to support any of them. Since certain details about this story are pretty murky, there are a lot of unanswered questions, so I'm going to try and address all of them on today's episode. Anyway, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, which may include stickers and thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now explore the disappearance of Roger Ellison. Our story begins in 1981 in Cedar Ridge, Colorado, a farming community located in Delta County at the foot of Grand Mesa National Forest, which had a population of around 1,200 people at that time. Our central figure is 17-year-old Roger Ellison, who lives with his parents, Ernest and Evelyn Ellison, in the unincorporated community of Eckerd, 6 miles away. Roger is the youngest of 5 children, but the only one still living at home, as his 3 older brothers and his sister have since moved out. He is currently a senior at Cedar Ridge High School and is known for being an exceptional straight-A honor student. In fact, he has been accepted for the upcoming fall semester at Western State College of Colorado in Gunnison, and has already put down a deposit on a dorm room he has selected there. Roger is also a very skilled skier with the Powderhorn Racing Club, who frequently competes in weekend ski meets, and has been working to attain A-level racer status in the United States Ski Association. In fact, his sister, Becky, was once a member of the U.S. ski team and nearly qualified for the Olympics, so Roger is hoping to follow in her footsteps. On the morning of Tuesday, February the 10th, Roger left his residence and hopped on the school bus to Cedar Ridge High School, where he arrived at around 8:30 a.m. At the time, Roger was sharing locker number 191 in the school's basement with a friend named Mitch Coleman. Mitch would later say that when Roger showed up that morning, he placed some books in their locker. Roger then told Mitch he would see him in class before the two students went their separate ways, but this would turn out to be the last time Roger was confirmed to be alive. Roger never showed up at any of his classes that day, which was very uncharacteristic of him, since he had a perfect attendance record up until that point. When Roger failed to return home, his parents performed a search for him, and after waiting up all night for him to return, they called the Delta County Sheriff's Office the next morning. However, the Ellisons were told they could not file a missing persons report for Roger until he had been gone at least 48 hours, and they said that he likely just ran off with a girlfriend and would be back soon. But Roger did not have a girlfriend at that time. It was considered to be something of a loner, so his parents did not believe he disappeared voluntarily, as he had no history of running away from home. Roger left behind all of his personal possessions, including a car and motorcycle he owned, and the only items he had on him when he left his home were his wallet and a yellow backpack he used for carrying his school books. He was believed to have only been carrying $3 at the time that he was going to use for lunch money, and had $1,000 in his bank account, which was never touched. But Roger's family was most perturbed by the fact that he left his skis behind, as skiing was his greatest passion. In fact, Roger had already paid the entry fee to compete in a ski race in Aspen the following weekend, and was greatly looking forward to it. When Roger failed to resurface, his parents tried contacting the Cedar Ridge Police Department, and they agreed to launch a missing persons investigation. The Delta County Sheriff's Office finally agreed to take on the case after receiving an unconfirmed report about someone with a backpack matching Roger's description who was seen hitchhiking in the county. The Ellison family took the initiative to perform their own independent investigation, as they offered an $8,000 reward for information and spent an ample amount of time driving around the state to look for hitchhikers who resembled Roger. They would also attend and hang around a number of ski meets on the chance that Roger might show up there. When Cedar Ridge High School's graduation took place in May of that year, one of Roger's classmates accepted his diploma on his behalf. But 6 months after Roger's disappearance, the Ellison family would suffer another tragedy when his father, Ernest, who already had a history of heart problems, experienced a fatal stroke at the age of 58. Prior to this, Ernest had spent every afternoon standing at the curb outside his residence, waiting for the school bus to arrive in hopes that his son would be dropped off. When Roger never showed up, Ernest would hang his head and cry, leading everyone to believe that the whole situation caused him to die of a broken heart. Shortly after Ernest's death, his wife Evelyn would make contact with a man named John Pash, who had been Roger's social studies teacher at Cedar Ridge High School and also worked as a wrestling coach. Now, years later, Pash would dispute a lot of the information I'm about to share with you when he commented in that aforementioned thread at the Web Sleuths forum, and I'll address this later on, but here's what was reported in the press. So, according to Evelyn Ellison, Pash showed up at her residence and told her that prior to his disappearance, Roger had been experiencing a number of personal problems and was feeling suicidal. Pash's house just happened to be located right next door to Cedar Ridge High School, and he claimed that Roger would go over there in order to turn in his homework so he could get time off to go skiing. In fact, investigators would hear from another source that Pash allegedly told them that Roger would show up at his house late at night to seek counseling from him because of personal problems. Well, Evelyn had a hard time believing Pash's claims that her son was suicidal, and his story would be contradicted by Roger's skiing coach, who had seen him on the weekend before his disappearance, and said that Roger appeared to be in good spirits and was looking forward to his upcoming ski meet in Aspen. Furthermore, Evelyn found it odd that Pash would not inform her or anyone else about Roger's suicidal tendencies until 6 months after he originally went missing. Investigators addressed these concerns about Pash by performing a search of his residence, but no evidence could be found, and Pash would sell his house and move away to California in 1984. Over the years, the Ellison family consulted some psychics for assistance and received a number of tips about Roger's disappearance, but they failed to lead anywhere, and the investigation reached a standstill. Evelyn spent the last years of her life struggling with depression and a heart condition, and on February the 9th, 1992, just one day before the 11-year anniversary of Roger's disappearance, she passed away at the age of 70. Prior to her death, Delta County Sheriff Bill Blair made a promise to Evelyn that he would not give up his pursuit of finding out what happened to her son. In March of 1994, the Delta County Sheriff's Office received a tip from one of Roger's former classmates who told them that shortly after Roger went missing, he had seen Pash digging in his yard. When asked what he was doing, Pash said that he was transplanting roses, which the student found a bit odd since it was still winter and not the ordinary time of the year for gardening. By this point, Pash had sold his house to the Delta County coroner, who had since turned it into a mortuary, but the sheriff's office got permission to perform a dig. They teamed up with a grave investigation team called NecroSearch International Incorporated, who used ground-penetrating radar to detect four anomalies in the yard and two anomalies underneath the concrete floor in the garage. A backhoe was used to excavate a section of the yard, but no evidence was found, and a decision was made not to dig up the garage. 1 month after the excavation took place, Roger's case would be featured on an episode of the Sally Jesse Raphael Show about missing children. The show received a pair of tips from viewers who thought they recognized Roger's photo, with one of the tipsters believing that he looked like a friend of her brother's, but even though these leads were investigated, they turned out to be nothing more than dead ends. The next big development occurred in June of 1998, when a dying man made contact with investigators from the Delta County Sheriff's Office and said that he wanted to make a deathbed confession and clear his conscience. According to the witness, back in the early spring of 1981, he had been out poaching for deer alongside another man in a forest located northwest of Cedar Ridge. He said they came across a young man whose hands were tied with a white cord and he was being held at gunpoint by another man. Shortly after the two poachers left the scene, they heard the sound of gunshots, and the witness said that he made a pact with his friend that they would remain silent and never tell anyone about what happened. After looking through a photo lineup, the witness picked out Roger and identified him as the young man he saw in the woods, and after agreeing to take a polygraph, he wound up passing. Investigators soon spoke to the second poacher who had allegedly witnessed this event, and he corroborated the witness's story. While a search was performed of the wooded area where this incident took place, it failed to turn up any remains or evidence to suggest that foul play had taken place there. It has been stated that both witnesses identified Roger's captor as a man who had since left the Colorado area, though investigators have never confirmed his identity. According to Delta County Sheriff Bill Blair, quote, "There have been rumors out there the person may have played a role, but it has never been proven other than people pointing fingers. There are people out there that know and won't come forward," end quote. Years later, Fred McKee, Blair's successor as Delta County Sheriff, would also publicly express his belief that there were other witnesses out there who knew what happened to Roger, but were reluctant to come forward due to their own involvement in illegal activity, which may or may not have been connected to Roger's disappearance. Cedar Ridge High School eventually became a charter school, and in 2010, the building underwent an extensive renovation in order to turn it into an elementary school. While there was hope that this might unearth new evidence to shed light on what happened to Roger, nothing was found. As far as I can tell, there have not been any further developments in the investigation these past two decades, so unfortunately, after more than 40 years, we still have no conclusive answers about what actually happened to Roger Ellison. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. So I think I would definitely rank this as one of the more frustrating cases I've ever featured on The Trail Went Cold, as it almost seems like Roger Ellison just literally vanished into thin air in the middle of a crowded school. This is far from the only unsolved case I've ever seen, where a student went missing while attending school, but the victims of many of those other disappearances were small children who would have been vulnerable targets for an abduction. But Roger Ellison was a 17-year-old male who was just 1 month shy of his 18th birthday, and between 5'11 and 6 feet tall. And as a skilled skier, he also presumably would have been in top physical shape, and not the easiest person in the world to abduct by force. One of the most baffling elements of this case is that the last confirmed sighting of Roger took place inside the school, where he put books into his locker and told a friend he would see him in class. All indications are that this was supposed to be nothing more than a routine school day, but Roger never attended any of his classes, so what could have happened to him during such a short amount of time? Regardless of whether Roger left the school alone or with someone, it is surprising that there do not appear to be any witnesses who saw him. This is why when the building was renovated over 10 years ago, people legitimately wondered if his remains might turn up there. So I think now would be an appropriate time to make mention of a blog about this case at the website findrogerellison.wordpress.com. The blog was maintained by a journalist named Lori Cumston Harrison, who had been a classmate of Roger's at Cedar Edge High School and graduated the same year he went missing. Harrison had previously written newspaper articles about the case and was constantly providing new updates. She seemed to have a vested interest in keeping Roger's story in the spotlight, but tragically, she passed away in September of 2011 after a lengthy battle against melanoma. Lori's obituary stated that solving Roger Ellison's disappearance was her professional passion, and even though her blog has not been updated for over a decade, it is still functional and contains some interesting information. She personally visited and photographed some of the case's key locations, including the Cedar Edge High School building before the renovations took place, and the site of John Pasch's former residence, which was located right next door. The blog contained a photo of Roger's original locker, number 191, which he shared in the basement with his friend Mitch Coleman, as well as a picture of the building's south exit. Assuming that Roger left the school immediately after parting ways with Mitch, his quickest route would have been to climb a set of stairs which led to the south exit and then use it to walk outside into a gravel parking lot. It's certainly possible that this is exactly what Roger did, but the big question is, why? Well, before we discuss this any further, I have to talk about the aforementioned web sleuth thread, which I mentioned during the intro. Around the time the Find Roger Ellison blog was started, there was hope that this case might be on the verge of being solved, because a poster at Web Sleuths had made a connection between Roger and an unidentified John Doe whose skeletal remains were found in a wooded area in Chaffee County, Colorado, in September of 1981. Since the victim was believed to be in his late teens, there was a lot to suggest that he was a promising candidate to be Roger, but their dental records did not match, and the Chaffee County John Doe has never been identified. Regardless, this development led to the start of a new thread about Roger's case in the Web Sleuths forum in August of 2008, which would become so lengthy that it was eventually split up into two separate threads, and some posters who claimed to have a personal connection to Roger started leaving comments there. In December of 2008, a poster under the username Chief79 posted a couple comments, claiming that they had been a friend of Roger's, and also shared locker number 191 with him and Mitch Coleman. He wrote, quote, "I have my own thoughts on what happened to Roger, having known him and knowing what he was like. Again, a lot of misinfo about him, his life. Things are never what they seem, and that was the case with Roger. Mitch and I spent a lot of times discussing our thoughts on what happened to Roger. I hope he found what he was looking for that day." End quote. Well, naturally, many of the posters there asked a bunch of follow-up questions about this, but Chief79 did not respond or leave any further comments. Obviously, you have to take his claims with a huge grain of salt, as I've never seen any official sources confirm that there was a third student who shared the same locker with Roger and Mitch. But the line, quote, "I hope he found what he was looking for that day," seems to imply that he believes Roger took off voluntarily. Well, the thread got a lot more interesting in July of 2009, when John Pasch himself finally showed up and made a very long post, and these initial comments should give you a pretty good idea of his attitude. Pash wrote, quote, "Hello, sleuthies. I use this term because it is obvious that you all lack the skill necessary to be a true sleuth. And what is that needed skill? The ability to reason, both deductively or inductively. What you all do is take a questionable rumor, factualize it so you can make it fit your needs, and then pat yourselves on the back thinking you have made a substantial advance in criminal investigations. It is rather obvious that you are a group of wannabes." End quote. Pash then went on to rant about how a ton of misinformation has been spread about this case in order to give off the false impression that he was responsible for Roger's disappearance. I'll be providing more specific details about this as we go along, but I first wanted to mention that only about a month after Pash made his initial comments, Roger's sister, Becky Ellison Livingston, showed up in the thread under the username Silver1SB. Over the next few years, she would make a number of posts and confirm that she last spoke with her brother on the phone the night before he went missing. Becky said she didn't detect anything unusual about Roger and that he was looking forward to a ski race in Aspen the following weekend, so of course, she never believed that he ran away on his own. Becky also expressed her frustration with the investigation, as the authorities seemed unwilling to speak with her family anymore about Roger's disappearance, and tragically, she would pass away in November of 2017 at the age of 64. While I don't want to put words in her mouth, from the tone of Becky's web sleuth comments, I got the impression that her family still believed that John Pash had some sort of involvement in Roger's disappearance. But let's get back to discuss Pash's comments in this thread. Regardless of his guilt or innocence, Pash comes across as very arrogant and condescending in his posts, and really doesn't do himself any favors. But on the other hand, if what he is saying is true, and he has spent the past several decades of his life being falsely accused of murdering one of his former students, then I can understand his frustration. Pash moved away from Cedarridge and went to California in 1984, and he implies that the cloud of suspicion surrounding Roger's case pretty much caused him to be run out of town. Pash claims that as a left-leaning liberal teacher, he already had a hard enough time fitting into a conservative community like Delta County, so once the rumors started swirling about him and Roger, the locals had no trouble believing that he was responsible for what happened. Now, the story goes that the main reason Pash even appeared on the radar as a potential suspect was because he approached Roger's mother, Evelyn Ellison, about 6 months after he originally went missing, and told her that her son was suicidal. If he was guilty, then this could be interpreted as an attempt by Pash to mislead the investigation and create a false narrative that Roger went off somewhere and killed himself. Well, during his web sleuth post, Pash claims that the story about him approaching Evelyn has been misconstrued. According to Pash, prior to Roger's disappearance, he had his social studies class complete an assignment where they answered some questions, and after the students turned them in, he would use their answers as some sort of experiment. Roger turned his assignment in, and Pash didn't think much of it, but after Roger went missing, he claimed that one of the detectives approached him and asked if he could see it. Pash agreed to turn Roger's assignment over, and the detective seemed very intrigued by Roger's answers to some of the questions, particularly in relation to other information he had found out about Roger. However, Pash claimed that the detective asked him not to disclose what Roger wrote in order to protect the investigation, so Pash would not share any specific details about the assignment or Roger's answers in his web sleuth posts. But Pash claimed that the detective soon got in touch with him and said that Evelyn wanted to speak with him about Roger's assignment. Pash said that he met with Evelyn and answered her questions as best he could, but maintained that he never officially diagnosed Roger as being suicidal. Regardless, it seems like Evelyn became suspicious of Pash, and that's how the rumors about him started to circulate, which led to what he claimed was a completely false story about him approaching Evelyn and telling her that Roger was experiencing a number of personal problems and might be suicidal. Now, you might recall that it's also been reported that Roger would show up at Pash's house in order to turn in his homework and that he went there for late-night counseling sessions with Pash. In fact, one story has circulated that before Roger went missing, his father Ernest confronted Pash about this, telling him that Roger was not to bring his homework to his house anymore, and they were not to have contact outside of school. While Pash maintains that this story is 100% false, while he acknowledges that Roger may have brought his homework to his house and given it to his wife on one or two occasions, he denies that Roger ever went there to seek counseling from him. In fact, Pash says that Roger was just a student who sat in the back of his classroom and never participated much, so he barely knew him at all. Well, regardless of whether Pash's claims are true, it sounds like Roger's case was not the only series of rumors surrounding Pash during this time period. When I say that Pash lived directly next door to Cedar Ridge High School, I'm not exaggerating, as the two properties were only separated by a 3-foot-high rock wall where students often hung out and smoked. According to the Find Roger Ellison blog, stories circulated that Pash invited students to his home as a gathering place for after-hours group meetings in which they could talk about their personal problems. These meetings were not part of the official school curriculum, and while Pash did not directly monitor them, he was still inside the house when they took place. Naturally, this caused concern among the community's parents and led to unconfirmed rumors that Pash sold marijuana to his students and that drug use and underage sex took place at his meetings. Well, during his Web Sleuths posts, Pash completely denies all these allegations and maintains that no meetings like this ever took place at his house. He also lashed out at the Find Roger Ellison blog for spreading these false rumors, stating that it deserved the quote-unquote Best Use of Yellow Journalism Award, but even though Lori Cumpston Harrison responded by extending an open invitation for an interview in which Pash could share his side of the story, it does not look like this ever took place. But interestingly enough, a poster under the username, the so-called smartest student, left a pair of comments on the blog stating that the stories about student meetings at Pash's residence were true, referring to Pash as a quote-unquote manipulative sexual predator and implying that they were one of his victims. I really have no idea what to believe here, and being a journalist, I'd like to think that Harrison might have attempted to perform a more extensive investigation to find out the truth, but like I mentioned earlier, she passed away only a few years later. As for John Pash, after disappearing from the Web Sleuths forum for a couple of years, he resurfaced to make a couple of more condescending posts in 2016. It seems like Pash leans towards the theory that Roger took off on his own, and he once stated that if you saw the answers Roger wrote on that class assignment, you'd have a better understanding of the comments from the mysterious Web Sleuths poster, Chief 79, who wrote, quote, "I hope he found what he was looking for that day." But frustratingly, Pash would not elaborate on this and still claimed that he was not allowed to share any specific details about the assignment. I should also mention that in April of 2022, just a few months before this episode's release, a poster under the username Pavlov's Dog showed up in the Web Sleuths thread claiming they were a former student of Pash's. They announced that Pash had passed away only a few days earlier, but I've been unable to find any official confirmation that this was true. So, what are we to make of all this drama? Well, unfortunately, it seems like Lori Cumpston Harrison, Becky Ellison Livingston, and John Pash, three individuals with a personal connection to this case who were keeping it alive on the internet and had a lot of key information, are now deceased. I would ordinarily not spend such a large chunk of one of my episodes talking about blog posts and message board comments, but since there is so little hard information available and a number of unverified details about Roger's disappearance, I definitely had to address this. And of course, there's the cryptic comments from Chief 79, who also seems to hold the belief that Roger disappeared voluntarily, but I find it interesting how Chief 79 just seemed to disappear from the Web Sleuths forum before John Pash popped up a few months later. Since Pash seemed to hold the same views about Roger's disappearance that Chief 79 did, you could almost infer that Chief 79 was a dummy account created by Pash in order to push forward his own narrative. Now, while it's undeniable that Pash comes across as very unlikable during his posts, and I have no idea how much of the information he shared is actually true, he does make a number of valid points. According to Pash, his typical school day involved him teaching classes throughout the morning and afternoon, and after school ended, he would spend a couple of hours coaching the wrestling team, meaning that the earliest he often got home was around 6 p.m. Since Roger was last seen alive right before classes started, that really doesn't give Pash much of an opportunity to murder him and dispose of his body. Since he lived directly next door, I suppose the alternate theory is that Pash could have killed Roger, stashed his body in the house, went on to teach his classes at school, and then disposed of the body sometime after dark. But the issue is that it doesn't sound like his house would have been unoccupied that day, because at the time, Pash claims that he was married and had a 3-year-old daughter and 6-month-old son. Pash and his wife did eventually get divorced, though he claimed in his WebSleuth post that the divorce did not actually take place until 1995. But if she was raising 2 small children inside that house, that also decreases the likelihood of Pash holding group meetings there where he did inappropriate things with students. And while a search was performed at the property years later, because Pash had been seen digging up his yard, it probably wouldn't have been easy for Pash to bury Roger's body there with his wife and children around. But on the other hand, it's really frustrating that Pash would post about this so-called assignment Roger wrote for him, which supposedly holds the key to the mystery, and then say, "Oh, sorry, police have told me not to share its contents." Well, if that's true, then why even post about the assignment at all? I have to say that when I read Pash's WebSleuth post, I got flashbacks to another case which took place in Colorado during the 1980s, and that's the disappearance of 12-year-old Janelle Matthews, who was abducted from her home in Greeley and murdered in December of 1984. I've already gone into great detail about this case during previous episodes of the podcast, but long story short, a suspect named Steve Pankey was charged with the crime in 2020, and at the time of this recording, he is about to go on trial for the second time, as his first trial last year ended in a hung jury. As you all know, Pankey was a Patreon supporter of mine and popped up on law enforcement's radar as a potential suspect because he just had this incessant need to insert himself into the investigation and talk so much about the case that he allegedly revealed details which were not public knowledge and only the perpetrator should have known. Since there is no physical evidence against Pankey, the entire case against him seems to be based around his own suspicious statements, so the debate continues to rage on about whether he's actually guilty of this crime, or nothing more than an obsessive true crime fanatic who loves to make himself the center of attention and just cannot keep his mouth shut. I do acknowledge that there does not appear to be any real evidence implicating Pash in Roger's disappearance, but I'd be lying if I said that I didn't get major Steve Pankey vibes from reading his WebSleuth posts. For all we know, Pash may be a completely innocent man who is simply lashing out over being wrongly accused for so many years, but he also may be narcissistic enough that he can't resist the urge to insert himself into a discussion involving a case he's been linked to in order to speak to everyone else in the most condescending tone possible. I think the most frustrating aspect of this case is that it should have been relatively easy to determine if Pash had the opportunity to do this. If Pash was teaching class and coaching wrestling on the day Roger went missing, then hundreds of witnesses would be able to verify his whereabouts and give him an airtight alibi. I'm sure that if Pash just happened to be absent from school during this time period, it would have raised some major eyebrows. Yet law enforcement has never publicly confirmed this or stated that Pash was ruled out as a suspect. In addition to Pash's alibi, we also don't know if his wife and children were home on this particular day, and if his residence might have been unoccupied for an extended period of time. It seems like the only reason investigators even started looking at Pash to begin with is because he supposedly made some suspicious comments to Roger's mother, which he claims never even happened. So you have to wonder if they have additional information which implicates Pash that they have never released publicly. Since investigators dug up the yard of Pash's former residence following a tip in 1994, I do think that's a good indicator that they had not completely eliminated him as a suspect. I know there's been disappointment over the fact that ground-penetrating radar picked up a pair of anomalies beneath the property's garage and elected not to dig it up, but this may not have had any significance. During his WebSleuth posts, Pash maintained that the residents did not even have a garage when he lived there, which, if true, seems to indicate that the owners of the mortuary built it after they purchased the property. And if there were human remains under that spot, I think there's a good chance they would have been unearthed while the garage was being built. If you've heard my previous episode about the Springfield 3 case, and the infamous rumor about the missing victims' bodies being buried underneath a hospital parking garage, you'll know that the detection of anomalies from ground-penetrating radar does not necessarily mean there's something buried there. I'm guessing that the authorities calculated the time and expense required to dig up the garage, and the likelihood of Roger's remains being there, and ultimately determined that it was just not worth it. Indeed, even if Pash did kill Roger, I doubt he would have buried him on his own property, particularly if he had a wife and children living there. Not to mention that digging up the yard of a residence located right next to a school is the exact sort of thing which would attract attention. We know that Roger had a perfect attendance record, so him missing classes was very unusual, particularly since he showed up to school that morning and did not give off the impression that anything was out of the ordinary. If we eliminate the possibility of foul play, the cryptic comments left by Chief 79 suggest that Roger decided to run away on his own, but that scenario really doesn't make much sense, since he left behind all of his personal possessions, left $1,000 untouched in his bank account, and was believed to have only had $3 on him that day. He also owned a car and a motorcycle which were left at his house, so what would he have used for transportation? I think the alternate explanation is that if Roger really was feeling suicidal, I suppose he could have made the decision to leave the school and go off to some remote location to end his own life. Cedar Ridge is surrounded by wooded areas, so it's not unfeasible that Roger could have gone there to kill himself and his remains have never been found. In some news articles about this case, it was reported that Roger's parents claimed he had been behaving oddly in the month prior to his disappearance, possibly because he was preoccupied by something. During her Web Sleuths posts, his sister Becky denied this and said she did not notice anything unusual about Roger during their interactions together, but it should be noted that she had moved out of the Ellison residence by this point and mostly spoke with Roger over the phone, whereas his parents still live with him and may have been more aware of any odd behavior he exhibited. Roger's brother Roy has also stated that he spoke to Roger on the Friday before he went missing and that he seemed indifferent and unwilling to talk, but Roy did acknowledge that Roger may have just been focused on an upcoming ski race. Indeed, that very same weekend, Roger competed in a race in Telluride, where he was reportedly very disappointed with his performance, and this could have provided him with a potential motive for suicide. However, while working on her blog, Lori Cumston Harrison managed to speak with Roger's ski coach from the Powderhorn Racing Club, and he confirmed that due to the weather conditions that weekend, virtually everyone who competed in the race delivered a lesser performance than usual, meaning that Roger's disappointment was nothing out of the ordinary. The coach maintained that Roger appeared to be in good spirits overall and was looking forward to the following weekend's race in Aspen. The fact that Roger was planning to attend college in the fall and had already put a deposit down on his dorm room is also another indicator that he wasn't planning suicide, but then again, suicidal people can sometimes be very unpredictable and decide to end things, even if their actions seem to indicate they have plans for the future. The fact of the matter is that this took place 41 years ago when people just did not have as much as an understanding about mental health as they do today, so it's certainly possible that Roger could have been suicidal without giving off any obvious warning signs. If John Pasch was telling the truth during his Web Sleuths comments, and that's a big if, then the implication seems to be that Roger's answers during that mysterious class assignment caused investigators to look at the case in a different light, as perhaps they gave off the impression he was feeling suicidal. While there's no evidence to support this, another theory which has been pushed forward is that Roger may have been gay, which was way more taboo back in 1981, so perhaps he wrote something in his answers to point in that direction. However, assuming this assignment actually existed, that doesn't necessarily mean that any of Roger's answers have significance to this case. Whenever someone goes missing under mysterious circumstances, it's not uncommon for things that the victim said or wrote prior to their disappearance to be interpreted in a much different light, particularly if there are no conclusive answers about what happened. But if Pasch is lying about the assignment and took the initiative to approach Evelyn Ellison to inform her that her son was suicidal, you have to wonder why he didn't say something earlier, even before Roger went missing. This allegedly happened shortly after Evelyn's husband Ernest passed away from a stroke, so it seems a bit messed up that Pasch would do this to a woman who was experiencing all sorts of grief. Incidentally, Ernest waiting outside for the school bus every day on the hope that Roger would arrive home is one of the saddest things I've ever heard about a victim's family in a missing persons case, and it probably isn't an exaggeration to say that he died of a broken heart. I mentioned earlier how it was reported that Ernest once confronted Pasch because he didn't like the idea of Roger going over to his house to turn in his homework, a story which Pasch maintains is not true. But if it was true, this could explain why Pasch did not make contact with Evelyn until after Ernest passed away. I really have no idea how much fraternizing Pasch did with Roger outside of school, or if there's any truth to the rumors that PASH allowed students to hold group meetings at its residence. I would be interested to know if these rumors had already been circulating prior to Roger's disappearance, or if they started circulating as the result of PASH being looked at as a potential suspect. It's certainly possible that PASH may be completely innocent of any involvement in Roger's case, but has still done some troubling and inappropriate things with other students. So now we have to talk about what is undoubtedly the most bizarre lead in this case, and that's the deathbed confession from the poacher in 1998, who claimed that he witnessed Roger being held at gunpoint by a man in the woods moments before he was likely shot to death. While it doesn't sound like law enforcement has ever publicly discounted this story, there are definitely a number of problems with it, and so many unanswered questions. I guess the main reason investigators believe there might be some truth to it is because the eyewitness passed a polygraph, and while they're definitely not reliable, the other poacher who was supposedly with them when the incident took place corroborated his story. The two men supposedly made a pact to remain silent about what they saw, possibly because poaching is illegal, and they figure they might get into trouble for it if they came forward. But I'd like to think that if you were a material witness to a homicide, the authorities would not bother to file any charges against you for poaching, so would that really have been a serious enough reason to remain silent for 17 years? Well, I try not to judge people for acting a certain way in stressful situations. It does seem odd that a pair of poachers who would have been carrying firearms would not try to intervene when they saw that Roger's life was at risk. Honestly, when I first heard about this deathbed confession, I wondered if perhaps the poacher himself was responsible for Roger's murder. He wanted to lead the authorities to Roger's remains without actually admitting his own culpability, so he concocted this story about witnessing Roger get murdered by a third party. However, investigators have never given off any indication that they believe the poacher or his companion were responsible for what happened. Since their identities have never been made public, we really don't have much of an idea about how credible they are as witnesses. I guess it's possible that they could have witnessed an incident involving the murder of a completely different young man who was not Roger and wound up misidentifying him, but what are the odds on that? I get that investigators might need to withhold certain details about this story from the public, but I find it frustrating that it's unclear when exactly this incident supposedly took place. The sources only state that it occurred during the early spring of 1981, but since Roger went missing on February the 10th, does this mean he was kept alive in captivity for an extended period of time? The witnesses also apparently identified the man who was holding a gun on Roger, and while his identity was not disclosed, they did say it was a man who had been the subject of rumors in this case and had since left the Colorado area. Well, that certainly applies to John PASH, but if this took place on the same day Roger went missing, wouldn't PASH have been teaching class during this time period and have an airtight alibi? Even if these witnesses positively identified the gunman, I can understand the reluctance to make an arrest without a body or other corroborating evidence, but at the very least, do the authorities make any further attempts to question this individual? But here's another aspect of the story which has left me scratching my head. The September 12, 1998 edition of the Grand Junction newspaper, the Daily Sentinel, features a quote from lead investigator Dave Duncan, who references the story which was shared by the two poachers and states, quote, "Supposedly, it was over a bad cocaine deal. Ellison had absconded with the money and given it to his friends," end quote. Okay, so how exactly would they have known this? Unless the two poachers overheard a conversation between Roger and the gunman in which they mentioned a cocaine deal, where did this information come from? Well, over the years, multiple investigators have openly stated that they believe there are people out there who know what happened and have never come forward, possibly because of their own involvement in illegal activity. This really gives me the impression that the authorities may have heard something to make them believe that Roger's disappearance is somehow tied to drugs. I'm constantly using the word frustrating in relation to this case, but perhaps the most frustratingly vague detail is a report that Roger was seen outside Cedar Ridge High School with two older, unidentified men. A Denver Post article from 2014 stated that he was seen with them the week before he went missing, while the Find Roger Ellison blog actually says that this took place on the very same morning he vanished. Either way, I have no idea if these sightings are accurate, and there aren't any specific details provided, and I am surprised they weren't reported on by more sources. Now, when this detail about a cocaine deal gone bad was reported in the press, Roger's brother Roy said that he had no knowledge of Roger ever being involved in drugs, and I've not seen any hard evidence to indicate this was the case. However, it has been reported that Roger's parents were going through a tough time financially, and while Roger earned some additional income by working at such places as a grocery store and a peach orchard, his family wondered if someone might have exploited this situation by luring Roger away from the school with the offer of a job. Since all of his siblings had since moved out, and he was the only one still living at home with his parents, Roger may have felt some sort of obligation to help them out, even if it involved being lured into doing something which he ordinarily might not have done. So if these reports of Roger being seen outside the school with two men are accurate, it's possible that after placing his books in his locker, Roger took a moment to go meet them. He may have only intended to go outside for a few minutes and was planning to go to class afterward, but something happened, which either led to Roger being abducted by force, or coerced or convinced to leave the area in a vehicle with one or more individuals who later killed him. It is surprising that something like this could happen at a high school without any witnesses reporting anything unusual, but then again, maybe there are witnesses who did see something and just have their own reasons for not coming forward. Of course, this is all just speculation on my part, but it's not like any of the other explanations about what happened to Roger make much sense either. For all we know, these vague statements that law enforcement has given over the years might imply that they already do have a pretty good idea about what happened, but without a body or any other evidence, they are powerless to do anything unless someone gives them information. I can honestly say with the information we do have, I really don't have much of an idea about what happened here, as this case is a major head-scratcher. There is really no evidence to lean in any one direction, and while John Pasch does not come across as the most likable character, there is nothing to link him to Roger's disappearance, and if he really was teaching class at school on the day Roger went missing, then I don't see how he could have been responsible. If Pasch really did pass away earlier this year, he may have taken some secrets to his grave with him, but if all these rumors about Roger being killed for something drug-related are true, then perhaps Pasch is nothing more than the ultimate red herring and has every right to be angry about being falsely accused. I seriously doubt that Roger ran away of his own accord, and while I can't completely discount the possibility that he went off somewhere and elected to end his own life, there's nothing concrete to support that idea either, unless there was something eye-opening in that assignment Roger supposedly did for Pasch. Overall, I do think that the most likely explanation is that Roger left school grounds with someone who later did him harm, but I have no idea how these events played out or who would have been responsible. As it is, it just seems like Roger simply vanished into thin air, but thankfully, podcasts like this can help keep his memory alive. So if you happen to have any information about the unsolved disappearance of Roger Ellison, please contact the Delta County Sheriff's Office at 970-874-2000. That's 970-874-2000. But if you just have your own thoughts about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email to robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Now the reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. This past month, I released a bonus episode in which I did something a little different from the norm and listed my top 10 favorite movies that were based on true crimes. I've also dropped an exclusive bonus episode from my spin-off podcast, The Path Went Chilly, in which myself and my two co-hosts, Jules and Ashley, cover yet another case from Unsolved Mysteries, the 1986 murder of Chaim Weiss. And for our patrons in Tier 3, I've recorded another new audio commentary track, which can be played over a classic episode of Unsolved Mysteries. I just wanted to give a shout-out to our most recent listeners who have signed up with us on Patreon these past few weeks, and they are Alicia B., John T., Zeph S., CB, and Astrid Maria K. Thank you all so much for your support. Also, I just wanted to announce that this coming Saturday, September the 17th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, I will be holding another Unsolved Mysteries Live Watch Marathon in which you can watch classic episodes from the show and chat with myself and your fellow listeners. I will be providing a link to our screening room for our live watch in the show notes, and you can also find them pinned to the top of our podcast social media pages. So once again, our next Unsolved Mysteries Live Watch takes place this coming Saturday, September the 17th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and we hope to see you there. I just wanted to give another shout-out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. I need to provide a big thanks to Miguel Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. So have yourselves a good week and join us next Wednesday for another brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold. We'll be right back.